We're on Daf Mem Aleph, Omer Aleph. Yesterday we had a long discussion about the Mishnah. We spoke about the special Chiddush of PTC. And we ended up with Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Shimon. And he's of the opinion that even if a person admits, he confesses that he is chayev knas for pitui, and he points to this bito shel ploni, and he says, I was mafata her. There's no collection of any payments based on his confession. Not knas, because modu knas is potter, but not even boshes pagam, because this would jeopardize her reputation. And the last piece of Gemara that we did yesterday, which is here in the middle of Daf Mem Aleph Amen Aleph, is Omale Rapopal Abaye, which is a little bit above the Tosus Lo Nitzricha. And the Gemara records a dialogue back and forth between Rapop and Abaye in cases where the person who collects the Boshel Supagam, we'll call it the Bailim on the Boshel Supagam, would make a decision that it's better for them to collect the Boshel Supagam even at the expense of jeopardizing their reputation. For example, let's say she, the Nara, says, I'd rather get paid the Boshel Supagam. That's worth to me more than the reputation loss. Or, for example, if the father's in the picture and he says, I insist on collecting the Boshel Supagam, what would be the din in that case? Would Reb Shimon be moda in that case that we're not going to block the payment of Boshes Pagam simply because of the pagam meaning the jeopardizing of the reputation, because here the person who has the money coming to them, to him or to them, meaning the balabayas over the Boshes Pagam, whether it's her or the father, says, I'm willing to waive that chashash, that problem of the reputation loss in favor of collecting the boshes of God. Maybe in that case, Rabbi Yehuda would agree. Rabbi Shimon would agree. In other words, Rabbi Shimon is only arguing in a case where we have some sort of objection or reason to suspect an objection on the part of the father or the daughter, maybe both of them. So therefore, Reb Shimon is going to say, we're not going to collect this knas, even though the mode of a knas is hodos bal din is kameya eidim domi. The Torah relies on confession as far as monetary obligations are concerned. But nevertheless, we have to worry about the pagam of the isha, because she was a consenting partner. But what about this case where she comes forward and she says, I want to collect the Boshes of Pagam. It's coming to me. You know, I waive my rights about the Pagam of the laws of my reputation. So Abaye answers Rava and he says, you know what? It's not just an issue of the father and the Nara, but it's also an issue with regard to the entire Mishpacha. There's a certain humiliation here in the family that one of the members of that family would have approved of this kind of loose behavior on a moral level, would have consented to such a pitui. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Papa comes back, he said, well, let's get together all the Bnei Mishpacha and see if we can get a unanimous decision that we're all in favor of collecting the Boshes of Pagam. And we're waiving our issue of Pagam Mishpacha. So Abaye answers that the Iefsha Deleka Chad B'medina Sayam Delo Nichale. That there's got to be somebody out there, you know, of the Bnei Mishpacha, as far away as they might be, that if they were here, they would express their indignation.
What does that mean? It means we can't take everyone into account, or we should always say, no, we're not going to let her collect.
Right. I think it's both. Both are correct. That since we can't possibly take everybody into account, there's always some member of the family who's out there in Hawaii or someplace far out there that's going to object. And therefore we make an absolute statement and a halacha that under all circumstances, Rav Shimon says, we're not going to collect the boshes upagam.
No. I think you pointed out yesterday there's a problem. Since when do we, in Dine Mamano, since when do we start worrying about the entire clan?
Right. So this has to do with Hodas Baal Din. That Hodas Baal Din is acceptable, but it's up to the Beis Din to decide whether or not they want to force or coerce the Moda, the one who confessed, to pay it up. In other words, the Chiyuv here is a little bit different than classic Dine Mamonos. In classic Dine Mamonos, we have Al Pishnai Medim Yokum Dova, we have objective testimony. Here, we don't really have testimony. In fact, as a general rule, a person is disqualified to testify about himself in either direction, whether Lechovasa or Liftar Zatzma. But the Torah says that as far as the Chiyuv Mamon is concerned, he obligates himself to pay through his confession. But now Beis Din has to make a decision as to whether or not they want to force that. If there's objective evidence and we believe him in what he says, there's testimony to support his claim, then Beis Din has no choice in the matter. They have to implement and even coerce that chiyuv to make sure he pays up. But if there's no real objective evidence here, because his hodah is kimeya eidim tovim, but it's not meya eidim, he's not really believed on himself, in such a case, the chiyuv mamon is nitan l'rishus Beis Din. It's given into the hands of Beis Din. They have the authority, or shall I say, they have the control to decide whether or not they want to force the moda to pay or not.
But when you say in give a hand to Beit Din, not each and every Beit Din, like the Sanhedrin once will rule on the matter and that's it from now on?
That's what it seems, yeah, okay. According to Reb Shimon. Yeah. Now there's a long discussion here of the Ra'ah. The Ra'ah is one of the Chachmei Sfarad
What's the Rosh Yeshiva?
Rabbeinu Aaron HaLevi, the Ra'ah, Reish Aleph Hei. And he's quoted extensively in the Shita Mekubetzes, which is an anthology of Rishonim on Masechta Ksubas and a number of other Masechtas, which was authored by Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi over 5 centuries ago in Egypt. And the Ra'ah is very complicated. I'm just going to tell you what I got out of it. I can't understand what's going on here. This is way beyond, you know, the purview of my ability to prepare for this year. The Ra'ah comes to the conclusion that if both the father and the bas agree to receive the boshes upagam, then even Rav Shimon would agree that in this case they have the rights to collect the boshes upagam, and no member of the family has veto power. Which means that our sugya of Rabbi Shimon, with this veto power of, or the assumption that part that there's some member of the family somewhere out in Yehupitz who would want to be to block this payment and veto it, that's only in a case where one of the balei ha-pagam, balei ha-mamon here, whether it's the father or the daughter, has a hesitation or an objection, or maybe we just don't know what they're thinking. In those cases, Rabbi Shimon is going to... let's take... Again, it's not clear, but let's take the case where we don't know exactly what the father and the daughter would say. We don't have a clear-cut answer from them. Maybe they're confused themselves. Mm-hmm. So in such a case, Rabbi Shimon says, well, let's worry about the Pagam Mishpacha. But if both the father and the daughter wrote some lekabel, is Ein Echad Mishar B'nei HaMishpacha Yichon Li'akev.
Okay, now that's not in the words in our sugi here, correct?
This is the Ra'ah.
Okay.
And again, the Ra'ah is no doubt motivated by the fact that who gives the right to the Bnei Mishpacha to block the Bali Amomon from receiving that which is halachically, according to the laws of Kol Shel Mishpah, is coming to them. Mm-hmm. So he's so bothered by this that he cuts down the Gemara, and he says the Gemara is, of Rav Shimon is assuming that there, you know, there's some reason to wonder about the Bali Amomon themselves, meaning the Av and the Bas, as to whether they're going to be happy with this situation. Mm-hmm. But in a case where both the father and the daughter, who are the Balei HaBoshes Supagam, they insist they want the money, it's coming to them, then no member of the family has the right to veto it. Again, this is a tremendous kiddush of the Ra'ah, and I don't understand the way it operates. There's a mechanics here in the sugya which is eluding me. I can't figure it out. He writes in the bottom here, Re'ei v'Yalkut Biurim, which is the collection of studies in the back. Well, guess what? I looked in the Yalkut Biurim, and he quotes the Ra'ah verbatim. Oh, good morning, Eric. Shalom Aleichem. And he quotes the Ra'ah verbatim, word for word, doesn't add a word. It's just, it's like a repetition. So I don't know why he bothered telling me to waste my time looking in the back. Okay, so now let's see where we're up to. Here on Daf Mem Aleph.
We're at the two dots, basically.
Yeah. So let's see if we can... you see, Tosfos Dira Maska Lo Nitzricha on Mem Aleph of an Aleph. And if you drop down approximately three lines, you'll see two dots, and then it says HaOmer Ganavti.
Oh, you have it?
Okay. Excellent. So let's just review the Mishnah so we can figure out what the Gemara is going to analyze here. The Mishnah says that in the case of Gneva, there are two different dimensions of payment. There's Keren, which is the value of the object that was stolen, and then there's Kefel and Dalet Vehev. That's called Knas. So with regard to Keren, if the Ganav confesses the crime, he has to pay the Keren, based on Hodas Baldin's admission. But he doesn't have to pay neither Kefel and certainly not Dalet Vehev, because Modu B'Knas Potu. The Mishnah goes on to say that if a person confesses that my ox killed a person, or my ox killed another person's ox, that's already begether mamo. That's not knas, and therefore his confession obligates him to pay that money. In the case of Hamas as ploni, my shor killed a human being, that's called kofar. Kofar means that you have to pay the value of a human being as he's estimated, evaluated on the market as an evid. Now let's just read some of the psukim here, because what we want to analyze today, that's our subject for today, is do these laws of confession impact on A, shor muad, and only a shor muad, or B, even on a shor tam? Now let's go through the psukim. The psukim are in Parshas Mishpatim, in Shmos Chaf Aleph, and there it says, with regard to a shor tam, who has not yet reached the level of three times over.
Do you have the psuk number?
Yeah, it's number Lamed Hei.
Thank you.
It says the following, V'chi gov shor ish ashore eu vames. So we're talking about a case where, let's call it Reuven shor kills Shimon shor. And again, we're talking about a shor tam, and it says umachruas ashor hachay v'chatzuas kaspo. So what we do is we sell the live shor, which is called the shor mazik, that damaged someone else and killed someone else's shor, and we split its money, meaning half the money goes to the owner of the shor, that's the mazik, and the other half goes to the nizak who lost his shor. So at the end of the day, the Nizak is only collecting 50% of the damages. So he's getting a half compensation. That's called Chatzi Nezek of Shor Tam. Then the Pasuk says, V'gam esames yechetzun. The carcass itself is worth, let's say, instead of 500, the carcass is worth 100. will split the value of the carcass. The Nizak will take 50 and the Mazik will take 50. Now, the Chachamim derive from this parasha that under all conditions the owner of the Shor Mazik has to pay Chatzi Nezek. And we're going to try to analyze exactly what's the nature of this payment of Chatzi Nezek. Normally, when you pay a fee which is different than the compensation, it usually means you're paying more above the compensation. And that's called a knas. What about a case where you're paying less than the value of the compensation? You're only giving him half. Is that to be considered a knas as well? Meaning the knas is defined as anything that's not exactly commensurate. It doesn't exactly reflect the value of the loss. Or no, a knas is only when it's a penalty above and beyond the value of the loss. But if it's below the value of the loss, that means that the Torah was very compassionate and let this person, so to speak, let him off the hook and let him get away with paying less. But what he's paying is certainly compensation, and therefore it's not knas. And the nafkamina for us now is going to be moda. What's going to be the deal if Reuven is moda to Shimon in front of a Bezdin that his shor, Reuven's shor, which is a shor tam, killed Shimon's shor? Would he pay Chatzi Nezek based on his own confession? Itmar, we learned Palga de Nizka, half a Nezek that's paid by Shor Tam. Rapapa Amar, Palga de Nizka Mamona. That this status of half the payment in the case of Shor Tam is Mamon, which would mean that if he confesses that his Shor, which is Shor Tam, did this damage, he has to pay half the damage by virtue of his own confession. Of Huna Breda of Yeshua Amar, Palga Nizka Knasa. That if you pay only half, which the Torah says you pay, that's called Knas. That's not Mama, because if it was Mama, he would have to pay the full value. And therefore, according to Avuna, if somebody comes into Bezdin with his own confession about Palga Nizka, he doesn't pay, because Modu Knas is Pata. Now, I want to point out one important addition here, and this is based on a Rashi in Masechta Bava Kamma. The original sugya here is in Bava Kamma, and Rashi says the following: that when Reuven Shor, which is the Shor Tam, kills Shimon Shor, both Shvarim are worth the exact same amount. That's the case that the Torah is addressing. Not only that, even the carcass is included in that value. So what we end up with is 200. Let's say Reuven Shor is worth 200. Shimon Shor is worth 200. And what we're going to do is we're going to take Chatzi Nezek and we're going to look at the value on the market of this Shor as it were alive before it's dead. And that's what Reuven is going to pay to Shimon. So of course, in this case, since both the Shor HaMazik and the Shor HaNizak are worth the same amount, we call it 200, he's going to pay him 100. And Rashi adds the following point. He says that payment is set and let's call it engraved in stone, no matter what the value of the nevela is. We're not going to consider the value of the carcass. We're going to look at the live animal and we're going to split its value. Not all the Rishonim are going to agree with Rashi, but Rashi holds that when we determine and establish Chatzi Nezek, it means Chatzi Nezek of the Shor HaChai, meaning of what the Shor would be valued in the market. We're not going to subtract the difference between the carcass and its value and the live animal. Is Bein Shanevelu Shava Harba, Bein Shi Shava Ma'at, whether or not the carcass is worth a lot or a little. Kishenotel Ze Chatzi HaChai V'Chatzi HaMes. And what it means is the following, that he, the Baal HaShor HaMazik, is going to pay 100. And the carcass belongs to the Nizak. So the Nizak is going to get half the value of his shor as it was valued at the time of the of its, you know, before it died, if he would have taken it to the market. And then in addition, he gets the nevela. V'zeh chatzi hachai. And that's considered half of the live animal. So it comes out that kol echad mafsid chatzi nezek, each one is going to lose half of the nezek, meaning the mazik is going to pay half of the nezek of the shor hanizak, and the owner of the shor hanizak is going to suffer 50% of a loss of his shor.
That's not really true, because he's got the nevela still.
Correct. But only from the shor chai. In other words, the 50% is a chip in the value of the shor chai. Mm. And that's what we mean when we say that chatzi nezek is a shutfus. It's a certain like partnership between the mazik and the nezek. It's a partnership in the loss. Each one is going to suffer 50% of the loss. All right, we'll leave this out for now, and maybe we'll come back to it later on when we get to the sugya of partnership. We're not up to the sugya of partnership yet. So let's summarize. We have a machlok stream of Papa Rav Huna. What is the status of chatzi nezek? Is it mamon or is it knas? Now the Gemara analyzes the machlokus. Rav Papa Amar Palga Nizka Mamona. What does that mean? That according to the strict letter of the law, the mazik, even though he's holding on to a shartam, has no right to say naively that my shor needs no protection. I can let it run amok and damage people because I don't expect it to damage. And therefore, according to our papa, fundamentally, the Baal HaMazik should be paying the entire price of the loss that the Nizak suffered. Because Savar, Rav Papa holds, Stam Shvarim, if you look at a shor, Lav Bechezka Shimur Kaimi, the shor is not in a state of being protected, meaning you have to assume that the animal might get belligerent. Again, it's not a shor mu'ad, it hasn't yet proven itself, you know, time and time, three times over, that it's a nakhan, that's a belligerent in nature. But even in its natural state, every shor needs protection. There's a certain percentage of statistical probability theory here that the shor might go out and damage, whether it's 20%, whatever percentage it might be. And therefore, if the Baal HaShor was careless in providing the protection that he had to provide, because La B'cheskes Shimur Chaimi, is therefore B'din Hu D'Mishan Kuli. B'din means, according to the strict letter of the law, he should be paying the entire Nezek. Rachmanu D'Chas Ilave. But the Torah had Rachmanis on him, and the Torah said, you know what, we're not going to bill you with the entire loss, because Dakati yet lo i'ayid Torah, it has not become, the Torah is a shor, it has not become a shor mu'ad. It's only a 20% probability. So that you laid back on your laurels here, you took it easy with the laid back position, and you said, look, it's only 1 out of 5 chance that my shor might go out and get angry and damage. So the Torah says, you know what? On the one hand, you're not a tzaddik ador, you know, you should have really taken more protection. But on the other hand, I have to take into consideration that this was an improbable situation that arose. You have not yet established about this shor that's, by nature, it's a very unusual belligerent shor called the shor amur. And in nature, a shor would not go out and damage in that, and gore in that way. Although some shorim will. You certainly should have, you're guilty for not providing protection. Because Stam Shorim La B'cheska Shimur Tat Kaimi. But nevertheless, it wasn't obvious to anyone that this shor, we couldn't have anticipated or predicted that this shor would go out and damage in that way. And therefore we're going to let you off with half a nezek. But that half a nezek is only because the Torah lowered the bar on how much you should be paying. The Torah was compassionate. But really, the Ikra Din, if we go back to the law, you would have been paying 100% of the law. So that 50% is mamon. That's according to whom? Rav Papa. That's called Balganiska Mamon. Rav Huna Breit, Rav Yeshua Amar, Palaskil Ksavar, Stav Shvar, Bechezka Shimur Kaime. That it's really unusual, until a shah proves itself otherwise, to assume that any shah in its natural state will all of a sudden go out and attack. That's not so. You know, you go to a bullfight in Spain, that's because they train the bull to, you know, to get angry. It's a well-trained bull. But a normal ox or a bull will not go out and damage. Ubedin hu de lo l'shalim klum. Really, according to the strict letter of the law, he's not guilty of any negligence, because why does he have to assume that that the shah will all of a sudden go out and damage and gore? But the Torah said, you know, we're still going to impose upon you a penalty. And what's the goal? What's the agenda of this penalty? So that he will provide shmira for his shah. Meaning that the Torah understood that on the one hand, the shah in its natural state is not, we don't assume it has the propensity, the teva, to go out and damage, but on the other hand, there are shvarim, nobody denies it. The Ritva here embellishes this. He says, "Ein lefari shestam shvarim hebecheskas nagchanim." Nobody says that your not even Rav Papa is saying that your average shah is assumed to be a nagchan, because again, we know that the there are four of us in the Zikin, and the one that we're dealing with now is called what? Anybody know?
Karen,
exactly. Karen, by definition, is lav urche, otherwise known as mashuna. It's a behavior pattern that we don't anticipate. So you can't tell me that every char is assumed to be a nakhan, otherwise that would undermine the whole essence or definition of Karen. But rather, what we're saying is that it's not usually darko lahazik tadir. It's not generally so that we can assume that the shah will go out to damage and gore and so forth and so on. But on the other hand, to say that it's bechezka shmira, that we can assume the animal is so to speak has its own inner protection. Like, for example, a cat. Right? If you go near a cat. Again, the exception are our cats here, but most cats, you know, if you go near the cat, they run away. In the case of a shah, you know, it really needs shmira. You can't assume that the shah is afraid of anybody. So if something ticks off the shah and it gets angry, it's going to go ahead and gore. So lefamim, on certain occasions, it's a mazik. And therefore, although it's not ragil, it's certainly lav urche, it's mishuna, it's strange, but nevertheless, it's rugged enough, meaning there are enough occasions on which a shor, even a shor tam, will go out and damage in this way, that we should impose upon you a chiv shmira, and you're negligent according to Rav Papa if you didn't provide that shmira, and therefore you should really be paying the whole price. But on the other hand, it's mishuna, and since it's mishuna, the Torah says we're going to have compassion. Comes along Rav Huna and he says, what do you mean, have compassion? It's not a matter of compassion, it's a matter of the fact that we didn't anticipate this kind of behavior. And stam shfar b'cheska shimur kaimi. The shor has its natural, inborn, innate protection. It stays away from damages. You know, if you don't get it angry, it's not going to get angry. Now he adds here in the footnote, the Tosa Rosh, he says the following. This principle of Rav Huna has to be understood. Why? What do you mean a Torah chasa? As if to say that in this case of a shor tam, the Torah has reason to be lenient. That's not really so. In every single one of the four of us, the Zik in the Torah was lenient. Let's go through them. One is called Shein and Regel. Shein and Regel only pay if they damage in a Rishus HaYochin in a private domain. If my animal goes through a public domain and starts eating your bananas, I don't have to pay for that. Same thing with regal. If in Rishus HaRab my animal stomps on your tomatoes, then I don't pay for that. Or take, for example, bar. Bar only pays for niske behema. It doesn't pay for niske adam or niske kelim. So if you fall into a bar and you, chas shalom, you break your leg, I don't have to pay you for that. Or if your keli falls into a bar and smashes, I don't pay you for that. Eish In the case of the mazik called Eish, you're potter from Talmud. If something was hidden, let's say he put his valuables inside a haystack, and the Eish of his neighbor burns up the haystack, he doesn't have to pay for the valuables that are hidden within. And these are all unique halachas that apply respectively to each one of the Dalet of Nezikim. What's common to all these halachas is that Torah chasa, that the Torah is having compassion and it's letting you off the hook. So why does Rav Huna seemingly say that chas rachman al hakeren, as if to say that in this particular case the Torah had rachmanos? So the Tosa Rosh says, no, that's not what Rav Huna meant. He didn't mean to say that in this case of Karen, the Torah had Rachmanus. There's a particular Rachmanus here. The Torah was compassionate in the case of Karen because Stam Shvam Becheska Shimu and Kaimi. It has a built-in innate Shmira. But the truth is, the Torah was Chasal Mazik in general in Ezekiel, in all Mazikin. There is some element of a Torah Chasa. But here, in the case of Karen, it's a very profound kind of a compassion in which the Torah actually cut down the payments and the compensation by 50%.
Well, that's Rav Huna is saying that the compassion is on the person who's damaged.
Did I say Rav Huna? I meant to say Rav Papa, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Are they arguing over the probability that the ox would damage, you know, one thing is higher, one thing is lower? They're arguing that given this probability that it damages.
Right. Excellent, Eric. You're a real Lamdan. I mean, that's the way a Lamdan speaks. It's not an argument in Metzius. You know, the statistics are well known. You could Google it and you'll figure it out. But they're arguing what kind of a percentage imposes upon a person a chiv shmira and generates therefore a pshia payment for the entire thing. If it's only 50%, it's 20%. What if it's 30%? You know, at what point do we finally say that it's shkiach enough? So he has a quote here from Rabbeinu David. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was a Rashiva, maybe he's still alive, I don't know, of Panovich Yeshiva. And he writes the following: Vade ein lomer shenechleku b'mitzias. Don't assume they're arguing in a physical reality. Your average shor, according to everybody, even according to Rav Huna, even according to, excuse me, Rav Papa, is not an agha. But nechleku, the machlokus is the man the omer says stam shor becheskes shima kavi sover shemishum she'ein betivam liga, since it's not part of their nature to go out and damage. Therefore, eino tzorach shmira, that the Torah alleviated him from a chiyuv shmira. So therefore, he's not a posheya, but nevertheless, the Torah is going to impose a knas, and that's the shita Rav Huna. L'mandi omer labaches kashimur kaimei, which is the shita Rav Papa. And even though we're not saying that it's anticipated or it's beteva, but nevertheless, yeshlam shem mazik. The percentages are higher enough to give it what's called a shame mazik. It's in the legal category and has the status of a mazik v'chayav l'shomro.
Since it's known to occur, and no one would be surprised that it occurs, then you should have.
According to that mandiyon, right. So again, it all has to do with the shame mazik, and these are legal categories, and the chovashmira. It's not a machlokas in mitzias. That's what he says in the name of Rabbeinu David.
Now, why, I mean, if in all the other categories of Nezek, Kadosh Baruch Hu's compassionate on the person who was damaged, who's doing the damaging.
Right.
Why would Rav Huna, like, why in this case is it the other way around? As being, according to Rav Huna, as being compassionate to the person who was damaged.
So the Gemara says, "Kehech the nitre l'torah." In other words, there's enough of a, like you said before, we wouldn't be surprised that the Torah wanted to find a method in which we could really impose on society a chov hashmirah, not a chov hashmirah mi'ikar adin, but a chov hashmirah mi'din knas. So the two levels of a chov hashmirah. So Koyter Rav Huna, on the first level of Chovah Shmira, there really is no Chovah Shmira. But the Torah wants to superimpose, even in this 15%, 20% possibility, a Chovah Shmira. And that's going to be the Knas. It's very fascinating because, you know, we have a principle, Lo Darshina Taimi the Krah, that usually we don't try to figure out what the Torah had in mind. Here you see Rav Huna an exception. He's saying that if the Torah says he has to pay half, there must be a purpose here. What's the goal? Now you have a Simon, Hezek, Ma, Ben, Vahemis, and Klal. These are the four kashas that we're going to have. Now some of these kashas are on Rav Huna and some are on Rav Papa. So let's start with the first raya. And this is going to be a support to the Man D'Omer Palka D'Nizka Mamona, which is Rav Papa, and Akasha on Rav Huna. Tonight we have a Mishnah. This is the partnership that I was talking to you about before. Hanizak v'amazik b'tashlumin. That both the owner of the shor and the one who lost his shor participate in the payment. So the Gemara says the following. Bishleim l'man d'yomer palgud in his kamamona. If you hold, like Rav Papa, that he really should be compensating him for the loss of the shor. The Torah gave him an out clause here with its compassion, and said he'd only have to pay half. Hainu d'shayach nizak b'tashlumin. Then I can justify the language of the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says that the nizak is also participating in this damage. He's really chipping in for the loss, because he should be getting 100%. So 50% is taken away from him. He's participating in the loss. El Laman Diomer Palgud in Iska Knossa. If on the other hand, I hold like Rav Huna, is Hashta Delav Di Deka Shakil. When he takes half the Nezek, the Nizak, he's not really collecting that which is coming to him. Lav Di Deka Shakil. He's not taking that which he deserves to be taking. And the whole purpose of imposing a chiv of 50% on the mazik is only to make sure that the mazik will provide the shmira that he needs to provide. Is now you betashlum and isa? Question mark as a rhetorical question. Are we going to say that he's participating in the nezik as he's losing half? On the contrary, he's gaining half. Because according to the strict letter of the law, he shouldn't be collecting anything. So the Torah gave him a chupar here. The Torah gave him a gift, and he's getting 50%. Again, even though for sure he lost 50%, there's no question about that. But that's not called partnership in the tashlumin when he's gaining something which according to the strict letter of the law he shouldn't be gaining at all.
It's almost like we're treating the goring as onus.
From the perspective of the Nizak and his lawsuit against the Mazik, it's like an onus. The Mazik has the right to say that I assume Stam Shvam Becheska Shimur Kaimi. Why are you hitting me with a bill here? What negligence am I guilty of? Right. And the Torah is saying that we're going to use this as a test case. You know, sometimes judges, I don't know if you know this, if you don't look out, you might just be caught, and then they use you as a test case. They want to create a precedent. So here the Torah is going to take this guy, the owner of the shor, of the shor tam, and he's going to make a precedent out of him. From now on, you know, we want to make sure that everyone, again, he has to know this din beforehand. Right. Otherwise, why is he the scapegoat here? But in any event, the bottom line is the Gemara doesn't understand the language of the Mishnah. If the Nizak doesn't really deserve a penny, it's lucky that he gets half. That's a gift. He shouldn't be complaining about loss. You know, the loss that the 50% loss that he's suffering. He should be happy about the 50% gain that he's gaining, but he really doesn't even deserve that gain according to the strict letter of the law. Oh, so now the Gemara reinterprets this shutfus, this partnership between the Mazik and the Nizak. Lo nitzrcha el lepchas nevela. So we're talking about the following. A carcass is worth X, we'll call it 100, but only if you sell it immediately. Mm-hmm. With the passage of time, after the death of the animal, the carcass diminishes in value. And the Torah is saying here that that's the headache of the Nizak. The Nizek, if he wants to get something is a word defray his losses? Is that a word? Did I get that right? If he wants to defray his losses, he'd be a smart person if he took the nevela immediately and sold it on the market. But it's not always possible to do that.
No.
It may take a while. So in the interim, until he finally gets a buyer, it may go down in value. And that's a loss that he's suffering. Because again, the Torah says the following, that basically the nevela belongs to the Nizak. Mm-hmm. But why is the nevela going down in value? It's only because of the hezek, right? Because the animal is killed and its body is decomposing. It's going down in value. So that which really belongs to the Nizak is now going to be a loss, right? Because again, what we
total loss for the Nizak,
right? Let's say the animal goes down, the carcass goes down in value on the market from 100 down to 50. Let's say so that 50 is an out of pocket loss to the Nizak, because above and beyond the evaluation of the hezek and how much the matzik has to pay, which has to do with the shor achai, when we get to the shor mes, that belongs to the nizak. The bala matzik has no right to take that. And not only that, the nizak has a right to own the carcass. Why not? I mean, it was his alive, now it's his dead. But in that sense, the matzik is causing him a loss, because as the depreciation of the carcass becomes more and more profound with the passage of time, the nizik is really continuing to suffer a loss. And it's almost inevitable.
He can't sell it until the case goes to court?
No, I don't think so. He should sell it immediately. He better get smart. And he could ask his local rabbi if he needs the guidance.
Because it seems somewhat like a contrived explanation that this is his participation, since he could choose to sell it immediately and therefore not suffer that additional loss.
Right, but it's almost it's almost built in. You know,
yeah, no, but Rob Berzon addressed that point. Sometimes there's realities, not a legal responsibility to keep the carcass until the court case, but there's other reality that he just can't. You know, hey, I'm sorry. I'm out in Timbuktu, and it took me 2 weeks to get to market.
Or until you find a buyer, you know, to purchase it. Let me just read to you a footnote here that might shed a light on this. He says the following: Lefi adin, according to the strict letter of the law, shor shehemish shor acher ein bala shor amazik chayv l'shalim shor chadash ella. Hanevela nisheres biyada bailin. Vamazik mishalim is a hefresh bein. He has to pay the difference. Just 1 second. Let me just see if I understand this correctly. Is he adding anything in this footnote? Hamazik mishalim is a hefresh. He says, "Kevan she nifchas shovi hanevela mishas misa ad shas hamara bedin." Hanizak hu bal anevela v'hu mafsid. I don't know what he means here. At shas amor bedin. Just 1 second. I can only sue him for them. Well, I don't know. I'll have to take this up later on.
So, but what's important here is that the value of the anevela, the damage is set, is determined by the difference between the value of one live and the value of an anevela at the time of the goring. Not any depreciation that occurs afterwards, even if it's completely beyond the control of the
Nizak, and that devaluation is going to be a loss suffered by the Nizak. So the Gemara says the following: you're telling me that's the chiddush of that Mishnah. Pchas nevela tnina. The Mishnah itself addresses this explicitly. Pchas nevela means the devaluation of the nevela from the time of its death. And where does it say that? The Mishnah says, and this is at the beginning of Bava Kama, Daf Tes, it says, I'll read the whole Mishnah to you. It says, "Kshehizik chava mazik l'shalim tashluvei nezik b'meitav ha'aretz." The mazik has to pay from what's called meitav, the best of his land. That's in a case where he doesn't have cash, and we collect from his land. And then the brisa is medayik from the language of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Tashlume nezik." It says Chav Hamazik L'Shalem Tashlume Nezek. It doesn't say Mishalem Mitzal Nezek, but Tashlume Nezek. Malamed, and the Brisa derives from that Mishnah, Shabbailim Mitaplim Binavela, that the Nevela belongs to the Nizak, and he has to deal with it. That's his headache. He has to sell it, and if it goes down in value, then he's going to suffer that loss. So the Gemara answers, Chada B'tam V'chada B'mu'ot. We need two Mishnayos to tell me the Chiddush of Pchas Nevela L'Nizak. One is in the case of a Shar Tam, and one is in the case of a Shar Murut Srifa. We need both. De'i Ashmin and Tam. If he'll tell me that in the case of a Shar Tam, the Nizak has to suffer the loss of the Pchas Nevela, is Mishum Dakati Lo I Ayit. Because since the Shar was not a Shar Mu'at, it hasn't been established as such, and therefore the Bailam didn't know that this Shar would go out and damage. They didn't anticipate it. They're not guilty of any violation of Shmira. And therefore, the mazik is not considered so guilty. And that's why the Torah alleviated the mazik of any loss that the nizak suffers as a result of pchas nevela. Aval mu'ad, the ayid. So in the case of shamur, where the bailam are really guilty of negligence in terms of shmiras hashor, emalo perhaps would say, in such a case, we're not going to thrust the entire responsibility of selling this nevela on the shoulders of the nizak. The mazik himself also has to participate in that loss, because that's a continuous loss. And as the animal not only was damaged in terms of, you know, going from a live animal to be a dead animal, but even its value continuing to decrease posthumously as a result of the original hezek. And you were responsible for that hezek, my friend, because you knew that your shor was established as a shor mu'ad. So we need a separate mishnah. We don't know which of the two Mishnayos, because we're going to have to derive both conclusions, but we need a separate Mishnah, an additional Mishnah, to tell us that in the case of Shor Mu'ad, nevertheless, the Nizak is the one who's going to suffer the loss of the Pchas Nevela. The Iyash Me'in and Mu'ad, and in the case of Mu'ad, where the Torah would tell me that the Pchas Nevela is suffered, is tolerated by the Nizak, Mishum Dekam Mishalim Kule. So the Torah is a little bit more lenient, since he's paying 100% of the value of the loss of the animal. So the Torah says, as far as the Nevela, will let you off the hook. But Aval Tam, in the case of Shor Tam, he's only paying 50%, Emalo. Maybe in this case, we're not going to put all the responsibility on the shoulders of the Nizak to sell the Nevela, but the Mazik also has to pay for the continuous hezek as the animal decreases in value. Tzricha, if I need two, I need two Mishnayos.
I don't understand the kasha. The Tanan is a Mishnah. The Taninai is a Braita, right?
Right.
So, did Rabbi Yehuda not see? I mean, he realized there's lots of Tanaitic material he didn't include. Did he intend his mission to be a standalone, self-contained work?
I think so, because otherwise he wouldn't have said, he would have said Mishalim es ha-nezek. Instead he says Tashlume nezek. And Tashlume nezek means minus the nevela. That's the linguistic interpretation the Braisa offers for that Mishnah.
So, no, what I'm saying is this. You're saying the original kasha is the Mishnah here, the Tanan, cannot be implying this law about Pachat nevela, because we have an explicit source over here.
Right.
But I would say, what kind of question is that? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he knew that, and he decided to include it not as an explicit reference, but as an implicit reference. In other words, that's why I asked you, it was self-contained. To say that we don't need our mission and learn it because we have something else here, but that wasn't in the canon.
Again, if the Braisa was a separate Braisa, you're right. But if the Braisa is based on just simply reading the Mishnah, then there are two Mishnayos that are coming to tell you the same thing. Again, you and I might not see why it's explicit in the Mishnah, right? The Braisa has to flesh it out.
Oh, I see.
But the Braisa sees it in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah deliberately avoided the use of the word Mishalem es ha-nezek, instead Tashlume nezek.
Mm-hmm.
And Tashlume nezek means the difference between the live animal and the dead animal, minus, without considering any value of the nevela as it continues to decrease. Toshma. Ma bein shor tam l'shor mu'ot. Okay, this is a Mishnah that is meant to delineate and enumerate all the differences between a shor tam and a shor mu'ot.
And this is a Mishnah here?
Yeah, this is a Mishnah. I'll tell you where the Mishnah is.
Which is Baba Kama Tetzayin.
Tetzayin, okay, good. Tetzayin. Hatam Shalim Chatzi Nezek, that's one difference. And number two, Migufo. We'll explain that in a second. But Hamuad Mishalim Nezek Shalim Min Haliyah. So we know the difference between Chatzi Nezek and Nezek Shalim. What's the difference between Migufo and Min Haliyah? So Migufo means that we estimate the market value of the shor that's still alive. That means the shor mazik. And let's say, for example, if the shor that died was worth, let's say, 500, and the shor mazik is only worth 100, then the maximum amount of money, the ceiling, that the mazik would have to pay the nizak is 100. He never goes beyond the value of his shor. Even though that's not even a fraction of the value. I mean, I shouldn't say it's not a fraction, but it's nowhere near half the value of the shor. Half the value of the shor, hanizak, would be 250. But we have a limitation, and it's called migufo, that he can only collect from the value of the shor mazik. There's even one mandiyom in the Gemara that says that the nizak grabs onto the shor mazik and actually sells the shor mazik on the market, and he gets half of that value. That's called yuchlat hashor. But in the case of a shor mu'ad, min aliyah, which means that the entire value of the nezek is collected from all the possessions of the mazik. We're not limited to the value of the shor mazik. The shor mazik might be worth only 100, and in the case of shor mu'ad, he has to pay 500. So we'll look for other possessions of the mazik to make up the difference in the 400. But basically, there's no ceiling. He has to pay the entire price of the nezek. But wait a second, there's a third difference between shor tam and shor mu'ad, and that's in the case of a confession. The lo ketani, the Mishnah omitted the following: the fundamental difference between knas and mamon. If you're going to hold palgan and iska knasa, which means that if a person confesses that his shor tam was mazik, he doesn't pay based on his confession. Whereas in the case of shor mu'ad, if he admits that his shor mu'ad damaged, based on his confession, will force him to cough up the payment. So that should have been a fundamental difference, which the Mishnah should have included. Unless you apply the principle in the next two words called tana v'shir, right? That principle means that I'm going to prove to you that although the tana lists differences or similarities, whatever, every mission is different, but it leaves out, it doesn't give you an exhaustive list. Well, wait a second. Whenever we apply the principle of Tana Bashir, we have to prove that it's Tana Bashir. We're not going to always assume up front that every Tana will leave out from a list any cases, unless we know it left out one case. And that's called My Shir the High Shir, meaning, how do you know that this was left out, the difference of modal piatzman, we're holding now that palgan and iska knas, that modal piatzman is part of. How do we know that that was left out unless you can prove to me that this Mishnah belongs to that category of Mishnayis, which is called Shir? Show me some other halachic difference between Shar Tam and Shar Mu'ad that was omitted.
In other words, Tanav Shir only applies if he left out at least two things?
Right.
Okay.
Right, we can only use Tana V'shir if we know that there was something else that was left out.
Mm-hmm. But more than one thing, or one thing that we know for certain?
Because in right.
this case,
just one thing.
That it just has to be one thing, but it has to be one thing you know for certain, whereas here, we don't know for certain whether this is left out or not, so we can't mm-hmm. therefore say it.
We're not going to assume up front, unless we prove otherwise, that this Tana is a Tana V'shir. If we can prove that in one halacha it left it out, then you're okay. So how do we see shir? And the Gemara answers, shir chatzi kofer. So here we have a case of a shor tam that killed a human being. Had it been a shor mu'ad, the Torah says explicitly that he has to pay what's called a kofer. I'll read the pasuk. If you have the chumash open, you can look at it. It's in Perek Chof Aleph, pasuk Chof Tes. It says,
wait. Which sefer?
The Shmos, the same mishpatim that you had open before. He says, "V'im shor nagachu mitmol shel shom v'uad v'balav lo yishmer v'imis ish o isha hashor yisakel v'gam balav yumas im kofe yushas olav v'nasan pidyot nafsho k'chol asher yushas olav." So we have here a case of a shor nagachu mitmol shel shom that killed a man or a woman. We put the shor to death, and the owner of the shor will pay a kofar. Oh, now what happens in the case of a shor tam? Well, the psukim, the verses in the Torah only address the case of a shor mu'ud. The implication is that in the case of a shor tam that killed a person, there's no kofar. And that's a real big chiddush, because I would have said that just like in the case of mazik, he pays chatzi nezik, in the case of kofar, where the animal killed a human being, he should pay chatzi kofar. Now, the Gemara Bava Bat in Bava Kama Daf Memalf derives that there's no chatzi kofar in the case of shor tam, shor gesodim, from the pasuk ubala shor noki. And the Gemara says ubala shor noki is a reference to a shor tam, and noki means noki mi chatzi kofar. That even as far as chatzi nezek is concerned, in the case of emesodim, there's no such thing as chatzi kofar. So why didn't the Mishnah mention the difference between shor tam and shor mu'ud in the case of shor shehoreges ha'adam as far as chatzi kofar is concerned? And that would have been appropriate to list in the Mishnah. Elamai, the Mishnah is operating with the principle of tana v'shir. Hence, we're going to add to it the modav knas halacha that's left out of the Mishnah. So the Gemara doesn't like this. The Gemara is not happy with this. Imishum chatzi kofar lav shiurahu. That's not called a shiur. And Hamani Rabbi Yossi Aglili Diomar Tam Mishalim Chatzi Kofar. So we'll stop here. And tomorrow, Blineta, we're going to analyze the Machlok Shin Rabbi Yossi Aglili in the Chachamim. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that a Tam indeed pays Chatzi Shir. And that Mishnah that asks the question, Mabin Shor Tam Shamud, is authored by Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Hence, there's no Shir over here, because indeed the Chatzi Kofar has to be paid in the case of a Shor Tam. So tomorrow, Blineta will make a siyum, you know, in Perek Elunaris. Eric, we had a discussion here about a chazara, but I'm going to postpone the chazara. I'll tell you why. I realize now.
Chazara, I missed a lot of this.
We're going to do a chazara, but I want to postpone it. I'll tell you why. Because, believe it or not, this Perek Elunaris doesn't really end where it ends. The beginning of the next parak is a continuation of what we've been doing all along.
Okay.
So we can't leave that out and start a chazar. It would be premature.
Not all of parak dalet.
Right, just the first blot. You know, it's one blot of Gemara will leave.
Okay, now,